This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today's subject, it's a special clinical focus, is on prevention and treatment of gallbladder problems. This is a really prevalent problem. A very high percentage of Americans suffer from gallstones. It is estimated that 10% of them have gallstones. There are hundreds of thousands of surgeries for removal of gallbladders and gallstones annually. And there are deaths associated with the surgery itself and with gallbladder disease. So let's take a look at what can be done to prevent and treat gallbladder disease. First, let me just mention that there's an accompanying series of articles that I published in our newsletter. If you haven't already, subscribe to our newsletter. Two parts on myths associated with gallbladder disease, and we demolish those myths because there are many misconceptions. And then the third installment, which came out a few weeks ago, is 19 ways that you can prevent or reverse gallbladder disease. So that is a useful set of liner notes or an accompaniment to this podcast, and we suggest that you access that free resource. So let me just start this clinical focus by taking you back about a century ago to Saudi Arabia. And maybe if you saw the great movie, the David Lean movie, Lawrence of Arabia, you get a little bit of a sense of what things were like in Saudi Arabia in the year, let's pick a year during World War I, in the year 1917. That's 100 years ago. And what we had then was a bunch of desert tribesmen, Bedouin, who were riding around on camels. They were lean and hardy. This was right around the time that automobiles came into prominence. And as automobiles and airplanes and mechanized machinery came into prominence, the need for petroleum began to soar. And, oh, by the way, they discovered that Saudi Arabia was a rich repository for petroleum. And so in the ensuing years, life changed for the Saudis. I recently had a patient come to me all the way from Kuwait, and she comes from a very, very wealthy family. The standard of living in the country of Kuwait is very high, and we know that there's been a real change in the way that people live. So a study was done surveying hospital records in Riyadh, the capital of Saudi Arabia, looking at it over the decades, and specifically looking at disease trends, cardiovascular disease, cancer, diabetes, etc. And what they've seen is a dramatic uptick in the incidence of degenerative diseases. And in particular, I remember a statistic that I actually compiled in one of my first articles on gallbladder disease. I believe I wrote it around 1990 or in the early 90s. In the compilation of records in Riyadh Hospital, the incidence of gallbladder disease went up an astounding 600% from the time that they first began compiling records in the early 20th century to the late 20th century. We hadn't even entered the 21st century. And so what that suggests is that this is a disease of modern times and is related to a modern lifestyle and in particular modern diet. And so we have a situation now where gallbladder surgery is getting easier and easier to do. And there's a tendency for doctors to say, well, if you have gallstones, and usually the way that that comes to light is after a first attack, or maybe, you know, you're having terrible indigestion symptoms, diarrhea, especially after meals, fat intolerance, nausea, vomiting. And it's worthwhile doing what's called a right upper quadrant ultrasound to see if you have gallstones. An easy, cheap test. It doesn't involve any radiation. And lo and behold, a very high percentage, as I said earlier, about 10% or more of Americans have gallstones. Now, merely having gallstones is not necessarily a reason for having an operation, except in certain cases. If you have a lot of them, and if you are at high risk, perhaps later in life, of having when you have surgery, maybe it's a good idea to get them out while you're relatively healthy, especially if you continue to have attacks. But some of the things I'm going to talk about today can help many patients avoid subsequent attacks, and you can happily go to your grave at 106 with the self-same gallstones without requiring surgery. The surgery now is laparoscopic surgery. It's much easier than it used to be. There was a very celebrated case back in the 90s of Andy Warhol, who went to one of the finest hospitals in the world. It was New York Hospital, Cornell, celebrity. Many celebrities go there for their treatment. And he had a surgery and he died. So some point to this as a strong reason not to get gallbladder surgery. Well, first of all, it was the old-fashioned surgery. It was before the advent of laparoscopic surgery, which is keyhole surgery, minimally invasive, but you know still may require a day or two in the hospital. But in those days, there were a big incision was done. Some of you were old enough to remember when Lyndon Johnson had his gallbladder out, and then he lifted up his shirt and rather tastelessly revealed that he had this giant scar across his abdomen. Well, no longer is that the case. The surgery is done through tiny keyholes robotically, and it's less of a big deal. And it's really brought down the complication rate. In Andy Warhol's case, he had been someone who had been very doctor shy, and he stayed away from doctors for a long time while he had severe abdominal pain. By the time he got to the hospital, he had a severely infected gallbladder. He'd also recently been the victim of an assassination attempt, so he was quite weakened. His nutrition was poor because, you know, he was nauseous a lot of time from his gallbladder. And so he was actually at high risk for surgical complications and died at a relatively young age. I think he was something like 56 at the time. And this is hailed by some as a reason to never get your gallbladder out. There are cases where you need to get your gallbladder out. If you have repeated attacks, if you have jaundice associated with those attacks, if you have a fever associated with these attacks, often it suggests that diabetics have their gallbladders taken out because a gallbladder attack sometimes is more silent in a diabetic. By the time they're aware they have the attack because of changes in their nerves, their autonomic nerves that report visceral pain, they're at higher risk for a very, very serious complication. So sometimes the gallstones are taken out preventively. So let's talk instead about some of the risk factors, because the risk factors actually give us some insights into what we can do to avoid gallstones, as with the illustration of what happened in Saudi Arabia. Perhaps we could say, eat like a nomadic Bedouin, get plenty of exercise, and stay lean. We were taught in med school the four Fs as a mnemonic device for who is at high risk for gallbladder disease. But actually, it turns out it's the five Fs. And those are female, fat, fair, fertile, and 40. Okay? So let's look at what that's about. First of all, females are at higher risk for gallbladder disease because there's something about estrogen that tends to promote gallstones. In fact, one risk factor for gallstones is if you're on oral hormone replacement therapy or on oral contraceptives. But there's something about the condition of estrogen dominance, which is something that often occurs to women when they're around 40. They produce less progesterone. They produce lots of estrogen. They're rather heavy and sometimes top heavy. The excess estrogen favors gallstone production. Not that men don't get gallstones, but women get them at a higher rate. What about fair? Are all gallstone sufferers blonde? Well, au contraire. It turns out, though, that Caucasians are at higher risk for gallstones than people of dark skin colors, with the exception of Native Americans. African Americans actually have less in the way of gallbladder disease. They still have a pretty high rate. But it turns out that among all the populations, Hispanics, and in particular Native Americans, have a higher rate of gallbladder disease. And that may be associated with their higher propensity to insulin resistance. When you look at, say, Navajo populations in Arizona, they have almost an 80% type 2 diabetes rate. And part of that is due to what are called thrifty genes. And they may be similar to the genes that the Bedouins inherited because they evolved in a very arid region with the threat of starvation looming over them. And they become very insulin resistant when adopting a Western lifestyle. So it's been estimated that there's virtually the majority of Native Americans have gallbladder disease. That's a very high rate. So it turns out that the four Fs are really five Fs, but there are certainly exceptions to that rule. So is heredity a factor? Well, they actually did an analysis, and they're able to do that with genetic screening, to determine if genes determine whether you're going to get gallstones. So say, for example, you have a parent with gallstones or a sibling. Does that mean that you're inevitably going to get gallbladder disease? And the answer is that heredity accounts for about 30% of the risk, which is kind of reassuring because it means that about 70% of the risk can be alleviated with lifestyle. Sedentary lifestyle is a risk factor for gallbladder disease. Why? Well, sedentary lifestyle is associated with higher levels of cholesterol and triglycerides. And let's take a look at, what is a gallstone? Because that kind of gives us some insights also into what we can do to prevent things. A gallstone is a solidification or a precipitation of what should normally be a solution in your gallbladder. Your gallbladder stores bile to be released in time with meals, and it should remain liquid. But try a little kitchen experiment. When you pour salt into tap water in a beaker, and it's just sitting there, you pour less salt into the beaker, and the salt begins to precipitate and solidify when the beaker's just sitting there, as opposed to when the beaker is moving around. Now, the moving around can occur with exercise, but it also occurs with contraction of the gallbladder. And so one of the problems in gallstone formation is what's called lack of gallbladder motility. In other words, your gallbladder just kind of sits there. The bile gets concentrated and stones precipitate out of it. Now, stones consist of cholesterol mixed with bile, and there's a bit of an equation that suggests that the higher your cholesterol in your gallbladder and the lower the amount of bile and the lower the amount of phosphatidylcholine or phospholipids, the more you're going to get stones. So let's repeat that. High cholesterol, and it's the cholesterol which precipitates into stones, and low levels of bile, which help to solubilize the cholesterol, and phospholipids like choline and derived from lecithin, but also synthesized by the body, these tend to dilute the cholesterol and prevent it from precipitating. I mean, there's other factors involved, but simplistically, high cholesterol made by the liver and not enough bile production, not enough availability of bile, and not enough availability of these phospholipids, and you're going to get stones. So it's also been shown that constipation is a risk factor for the production of stones. And the reason for that is partially that constipation is associated with lack of gallbladder motility. Okay, gallbladder just kind of sits there and is not doing its job. But also constipation tends to prevent what's called the enterohepatic circulation, the circulation from the intestine to the liver and to the gallbladder of bile. So when you don't have good circulation of bile due to constipation, stones will form. Associated also with gallstones is something called fatty liver. Very high association with fatty liver, insulin resistance, and gallstones, cardiovascular risk due to high cholesterol. Having a high cholesterol, but in particular what's called ApoB, as opposed to apolipoprotein A, that is a risk factor. That's the bad pattern of apolipoproteins, also associated with small, dense LDL particles. In fact, it's actually been shown that you get a bit of a protective effect from statin drugs. Not that I'm a big fan of statin drugs, but statin drugs have actually been shown to somewhat protect against gallstones. A low-fiber diet is something that has been shown to be a risk factor for gallstones, probably because it's associated with constipation, but also it may have some microbiome effects. And we now know that the composition of the microbiome has an impact on gallstone formation. It's really quite interesting. There's some studies that show that in some patients, antibiotics will reduce the susceptibility of stones to form. That means they're killing off bad bacteria. And that's not such a great idea. We don't want to give every gallstone sufferer antibiotics. But there are certain probiotic species, one in particular, Lactobacillus plantarum, that tends to help with the recirculation of bile that actually takes cholesterol out of the equation, both in your bloodstream and in your gallbladder, which reduces the risk of cardiovascular disease, of course, but also of stones. So the fiber acts as a prebiotic that helps good bacteria thrive, prevents dysbiosis or bad bacteria that can be a benefit. Now, not that all antibiotics are beneficial. One in particular that's used a lot these days for Lyme disease tends to create a higher risk for gallstones. Not entirely sure why that is, but probably has an effect on bile circulation and possibly on the microbiome. Patients who've had part of their intestine taken out called the ileum, or patients with Crohn's disease, type of inflammatory bowel disease, have a higher risk for gallstones. Here's one that's of real practical importance. On the one hand, it's a good idea to keep your weight down because obesity, you know, the five Fs, female fat, fair, etc. Well, you want to lose weight, but you don't want to lose weight precipitously because losing weight rapidly, like losing weight 30 pounds in 6 weeks, is strongly associated with the development of gallstones. Why might that be? Well, if you're on a diet that is very low calorie, your gallbladder kind of doesn't have to do a lot of work. The motility is reduced, and the bile that's stuck there that doesn't move tends to precipitate. That's part of why drastic weight loss is associated with gallstone formation. And yo-yo dieting, in particular, you know, going up and down and up and down the ladder on weight, is a risk factor. Certain drugs, as I said, oral contraceptives, hormone replacement therapy that's taken orally, but also a drug called Tricor, which is used to reduce triglycerides. I hate that drug because the triglycerides, if they're high, very amenable to diet modification, and also high-dose fish oil, which has actually been shown to be protective against gallstones. So fish oil will take care of the triglyceride problem while protecting you from gallstones. So when we look at misconceptions about gallbladder disease, one of the biggest misconceptions is that dietary fat is the cause of gallbladder disease. Now, indeed, if you have stones, if you're going to eat a very fatty meal, it is quite likely it'll precipitate a gallbladder attack. And the reason for that is that fat is a strong stimulus for cholecystokinin. Cholecystokinin starts the digestive process going, and it causes the gallbladder to empty. And the gallbladder contracts, but there's stones present. That's when a stone might get lodged in the bile duct and cause you a lot of pain. So fat, and there's no question, if you have gallstones already, high-fat diet, you know, lots of fried food, that could be problematic. More on that later in terms of dietary strategies. But actually, studies show that in terms of the causation, excess carbohydrate is actually more the cause. And why should that be the case? Well, when it comes to synthesis of cholesterol in the liver, excess dietary carbohydrate drives that synthesis. So refined carbohydrates, in particular fructose, which is present in soda, is a big, big trigger. And you know, one of the favorite drinks of the Saudis, it's hot over there. They love their soft drinks. And those soft drinks are made with sugar or high fructose corn syrup. And that is a big driver for their gallstones. And also the refined carbohydrates, the amount of bread, pasta, and so on, and desserts and sweets that they consume. So that's a big misconception. And let's tackle some more misconceptions in part two of today's podcast, because we divide our podcast into two parts, and we want you to join us as we continue to discuss gallbladder disease and how to prevent and reverse it. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.